The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to the She Word. Conversations that women rarely have, but really should. There are several topics that I have little or no experience in, and this show is one of them. Last November, I sat in on a conference that related to women and technology, and one panel discussion was specifically relating to AI. As a child of the 70s, I've been hugely skeptical about AI and slow to embrace this new world of technical solutions. But as one speaker recently pointed out, AI is not going anywhere. It's here to stay, and by the end of this year, AI will be present in a vast number of our daily functions. But back to the panel discussion. It was said that the creation of AI is dominated by men. Not but by some sinister plan, but because the industry is male gender led. However, the implication of having a male gender biased technology industry is far reaching, not least of all that AI itself has a 67% male gender bias. That means we're interacting with male gender biased technology solutions every day. Out of nearly 1.6 million AI professionals worldwide, there's a stark gender imbalance. Women comprise only 22% of AI talent globally, with even lower representation at senior levels, occupying less than 14% of senior executive roles in AI. Within the EU, the disparity is equally concerning. What is AI gender bias and why does it matter? AI systems learning from data-filled stereotypes often reflect and reinforce gender biases, says Zinya Del Valla. These biases can limit opportunities and diversity, especially in areas like decision-making, hiring, loan approvals, and legal judgments. And one area that's of huge concern to me is the medical profession, as we lean on technology-based solutions more and more. Well, here to bring clarity to this topic are three women who are AI experts in their field. Izzy Heisler, the CEO of Growth Gurus, who has a passion for data-driven decisions. An award-winning agency, Growth Gurus, is here in Malta, but serving clients all over the world. Izzy is also a mum, a traveller, and passionate about all things digital. Natalia Malia is a lead AI engineer, deep learning specialist, and data scientist with a background for building intelligent systems that make real impact. Natalia manages AI operations and cross-team integration at Axon Park, overseeing AI feature development, deployment, and consistency across departments to ensure smooth platform functionality. And Vanessa Camilleri is the Senior Lecturer, Department of AI, University of Malta. Vanessa, Dr. Vanessa, has a lifelong career in education, more specifically focused on technology over the past decade. It was Vanessa's statement at the conference last November that got me thinking about AI and the gender-based implications ever since. Ladies, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure for us to be here.
I'm so excited. I'm really excited to be talking about this. And I'm going to stick with you, Vanessa, because it really was you and your statement that made me suddenly start thinking about AI and how it's impacting on us and also this gender-based issue. And everyone I've mentioned this to suddenly said, oh, wow, I never thought of that. So this is what we're going to be looking at during this show. But in a moment, we're going to be looking at just starting off with what AI is. But before we get there, I'm going to ask, did I miss anything out when I described you, when I introduced you?
Well, I'm a mum as well of a 15-year-old, and he's turning 16, so he's pretty much into, you know, all things AI and technology and stuff. And I used to be a runner. But the thing is that I've been into technology for close to 2 decades now, and even more. But it was only recently when I started to really think more deeply into the effects and the impacts that AI is having and technology is having on all of us. And this gender thing, we might not see it. And, you know, it's not about scaring people or saying, you know, it's like all these people, feminists and stuff, and they want to do things their way and they're all despised. But the reality is that when there are these subtle messages coming across, they reinforce certain biases. They reinforce more stereotypical responses. And that's when the danger is. And these become kind of integrated into the real life, woven into real life. And you know, when you're not realizing, when you're not fully conscious and fully aware of the negative effects these can have, that's where the danger is.
I feel like that was the whole show in one sentence. Vanessa, I'm so glad that you're here. And I'm so glad that you're here to discuss this. But sitting at the table is one of your students. Yeah. Natalia, you know Vanessa. Did I miss anything out about you?
Not particularly, no. I mean, as Vanessa said, definitely. I think she was one of the main inspirations of me getting into the field, really, because we don't really have role models who are women as we grow up. So it's really nice to kind of be also part of that environment that's also going to kind of help women see that, you know, you can do it too.
I love that. So we're both fangirling over Vanessa right now.
Come on.
I like it. And Izzy, so we actually know each other through Growth Gurus and have a working relationship as well. And it's sort of hot for the press. It's news right now that you are the new CEO.
I am, yes.
Which I'm so excited about. But did I miss out anything about you in your introduction?
No, I think you covered it really well. But yes, I took over CEO role in October. So I've been running it since then, but kind of undercover. And now we're officially kind of releasing that. So you've heard it here first.
Yay!
I have been in marketing for most of my career. So marketing and general management. And I have always been very passionate about gender bias in general. So outside of kind of the tech field. And now seeing that come to life in tech and seeing how the progress that we've made over the past few years maybe undone because of the biases of the past that are coming through AI. So it's a topic I'm really interested in general and in AI and how far that's progressing even more.
I love what you just said there. And this is one of the things that's very much concerned me. You said about being concerned about seeing the progress that we've made go backwards. And I think when Vanessa, when you were at that conference and you made that statement, I suddenly thought to myself exactly what you've just said, Izzy. Are we going to start going backwards?
Life is never plain sailing, but your period is one challenge that shouldn't ever stop you or stand in your way. Tampax is the number one combination for comfort, protection, and discretion. Tampax tampons are independently tested so you can be certain that there's no harmful substances present. Tampax adapts to your unique body shape to provide you protection even when you're living life to the full, because nothing should stop you, period.
Now, before we dive into that, I want to start off with a real basic question. What is AI?
Okay, Natalia, do you want to start? No, but like, let's see.
Yeah, let's go for it. So AI at its core is really just, we're basically making rocks think. So all it is a piece of silicon carved up from sand, forged, processed, etc., running off of ones and zeros And we've just reached a point where we can make these ones and zeros so smart that there is a point where these ones and zeros can give us this automated output, which is, for example, when you log on to ChatGPT and you ask it a question, all it is ones and zeros reinforced, trained on data, past data, and it's telling you what it has observed in a very processed, very distilled kind of way, with a bunch of guardrails, with a bunch of programs later that are kind of controlling the output and streamlining it and bringing it to you. But at the end of the day, it's just a thinky rock.
Yeah, even though people might think otherwise, people might associate these new emerging technologies and the way large language models are being integrated, like chatbots, like, you know, the use of ChatGPT, people might associate them to some kind of living person or a way of interacting, but they do associate emotions, feelings to it. Again, when that happens and there is bias, then it becomes even more dangerous. But something else which people may or may not know is that artificial intelligence was not born with ChatGPT. There's this kind of notion that, you know, artificial intelligence is as new as like 3 years ago when ChatGPT came up. Artificial intelligence was a term coined in 1956 by a group of men who were doing a kind of summer school or summer meeting, okay? And they were like brains thinking about what's next. And one of them came up with like, what if we enable machines to think like humans, to solve problems like humans? That's where artificial intelligence comes from. So this is why artificial intelligence was born out of this need to make machines solve humans' problems in a way a human does. But back then in the 1950s, there was no computational power, there were no resources, there was no data about the world, okay, so that this could transform into reality. Fast forward 3 decades, 1980s, the work started in artificial intelligence. We see the first emergence of neural networks. Neural networks would be these kind of processes that brains use to think, okay? And they were trying to reproduce them on machines. But again, the work was very, very slow. It took a couple more decades to start seeing more advanced AI research work. The breakthrough came in 2014, and that's where, you know, this element of deep learning came up. What is deep learning? Deep learning is the way of teaching a machine to learn the way humans learn, the way toddlers learn.
But what happened in 2014?
There was research that's coming up, that came up, so there was more advanced research, but also the computational powers were increasing, there were more resources put into that. The tech world was evolving, both from a hardware perspective and also from a software perspective. They were brought together, okay, and this sort of advanced research projects.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second, because we've talked about ones and zeros. We've talked about computers thinking for themselves or being programmed to think themselves, and that's the fact that it has an origin back in the 1950s. But I want to just make this very, very simple, because you rightly said whenever anybody talks about AI, probably the very first thing that we refer to is ChatGPT.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
However, I'm going to ask you, Izzy, because I want this in super straightforward terms. If we've only been thinking about, as Vanessa said, we've only been thinking that AI is affecting us since we started talking about ChatGPT. That's what everybody normally thinks of. But where, what appliances, what interactions do we have? Because it was actually you who said that we would be radically engaging with AI before the end of this year. How? What do we use that uses AI? How do we interact with AI?
So AI is basically already in all of our touch points, pretty much. So on your phone, there's AI when you go on your photo album and it searches for photos based on certain images that's AI generated, bringing up shopping ads and bringing up the things that you like so that you can repurchase those things. That's AI working in the background to do that. So AI is already at our fingertips in all of our interactions. But yes, like you said, there is that common thing that I've heard it a lot in the business field, like, oh, are you using AI? We use ChatGPT for our captions. It's like, yes, that is a piece of AI, but there's so much more AI. And in marketing, we use AI in every field of marketing, in ads and every aspect of it. And that's why it's so scary that that data is biased. I mean, bias in, bias out, right? So if biased data is going into the programming, then biased data is going to come out of it.
We've already started off the show talking about the benefits. As you said, we talked about ChatGPT. It's not something that I actually use at all, to be quite honest with you. Again, skeptical 1970s child. But you did mention ad generation, ad targeting, and the fact that it's there in the palm of our hand. So I just want to kind of get you guys, before we dive into necessarily the gender issue, but I want to look at two things. How is AI enriching our lives, and what do we need to be mindful of before we even get into... I love the fact that Vanessa's just gone... Okay, but where do we need to be skeptical? What do we need to worry about? What do we need to say, okay, no, that's great?
I mean, one of the advantages is time saving. So for me, as a full-time working mother, it has helped me be more efficient in my work. There I will say yes. It's not something I rely on fully, but it's helped to take my insights and make me more productive. So in many fields, whether that's in content, again, I'm not going to type in a simple prompt and copy what I get from ChatGPT, but would I use it to enhance my ideas? Yes. The same in ads. So now you can create one ad and then it will give you all the suggestions. It will A/B test it for you automatically. Before, we had to do all of that work manually. So that's allowing us A, to save time for ourselves and manage that work-life balance, and also for our clients, and to be more kind of accessible to different clients because we can have different price points. So in an efficiency aspect, there are definitely advantages, at least in my field of work. Mm.
But also on a personal level, because I've noticed with my Strava, I'm a runner like you, Vanessa, and Strava will now generate for me an AI response to every training session. Generally, it seems to be on the more friendly version, whereas Garmin would be like, well, that was a terrible run.
Unproductive.
Unproductive, yes. You're definitely a runner, Vanessa. Every runner is going, yes, we hate it when Garmin says unproductive. But the AI generated from Strava is usually very friendly. So then we've got the work enhancement, but what about in the life enhancement for anybody that's sitting here that's either not a runner or doesn't operate in advertising? Where else are we seeing AI enriching our lives?
It depends, because if people are fans of social media and they're present very much on social media, AI is working in the background to make the social media experience appear to you at least better. Because the AI is there working so that you see what you like to see. It gives you your preferences without you having to look for them. It presents this information. If you log on to Netflix and watch Netflix, it's going to recommend the movies according to your past viewership. That's all AI. Oh. If you go on Amazon and you get, you know, recommendations for bestsellers, there is AI over there that's working. So all these are aspects of daily life that we may not even be aware, where we actually interact. Let's say AI is helping us make decisions.
Simplifying.
Yeah, simplifying. But I think what we need to keep in mind there is that the AI is there, and AI is presenting those recommendations. It doesn't mean that they're the best recommendations for me or for you. It means that the AI has been programmed in a way that, depending on my scrolling patterns or how long I linger to watch a certain reel or video, or, you know, what sort of tendencies do I have when I click, the AI has been programmed to take those as choices, as preferences, and then present more of them to you. And then the AI has been trained again so that if you pick one over the other, then it presents more of that. So in terms of making daily choices, daily, preferential sort of choices, then the AI sort of helps. But AI is in the background of many other things. You're applying for a job. Okay, and you're using a social media platform. Most of the job listings, okay, may be sort of like screened through AI. Now, if we return back to the original point of bias, if the AI has not been programmed fairly, or basically to take decisions in a fair and just manner, it might simply just, you know, shut you off, you know, not even shortlist you with other candidates, because it has been trained, okay, to take such decisions.
And we're going to take a deep dive into that in a few minutes, because that is something that it has alarmed me massively. And Izzy, before we sat down, you and I both said, well, we've been looking deep into this, having a deep dive into the research. And both were like, oh my good Lord. I mean, there is some frightening things that we're going to be discussing at the table. But I want to come to see if there's any other way that AI is enriching our lives. I just want to come back to Vanessa. You were talking about preferences. And so this is what we call algorithms. This is AI, AI is algorithms. It's the same.
It's a set of instructions.
There you go. Okay, because I want to be just clear about those. We use algorithms so often when we talk about
algorithms. The term algorithms refers to a set of instructions that the machine has been programmed with to behave in the way it does.
Okay.
Okay. Or to act rather than behave, because behave we attribute to humans, right? So to act in the way it does, or to present you with choices and decisions in the way it does.
Ooh, that's really interesting that you say you made the distinction between behavior and acting. Because just coming back to something that you said before, we have to keep in mind that AI is not human.
It's not.
And it's just programming. Anything else that I've missed that and the way that AI enriches us in our lives?
I would also say it's coming more and more mainstream into our day-to-day stuff, because even nowadays a simple coffee machine has AI in it.
Ooh.
It's learning your recommendations for the way you like your coffee.
What?
Yeah.
So you don't have to think about it.
You don't have to think.
You
or
find
smart
it there.
Homes.
Smart phones. Yeah.
Smart homes, automation. You put the lights on, you walk into your house, the lights are turning on, it puts your TV on automatically, it puts your AC on automatically, adjusts the temperature just the way you like it. It's everywhere nowadays. You can't really escape it. And people don't attribute this to be AI, but this is also AI. It's not as mind-blowing as ChatGPT, but there is an AI algorithm there that is adapting, and the adaptation is what sets AI apart from the regular software that's like
Can you say that again? Because that was really, really key. You said that AI, that learning is what distinguishes it from regular programming.
Exactly.
Regular
software.
Okay, got it. Okay, I think I feel like I'm getting there. So what do we need to be skeptical before we even go into the gender bias on a general wavelength? What do we need to be skeptical and wary about with AI?
I would say it would have to be over-reliance on AI, just because it's become so powerful nowadays that everyone is kind of closing their eyes, hopping on, and letting AI take the wheel, because we've been so impressed by the results. And in some sense, to even not looking at the gender bias, it's stripping away some of our natural creativity, some of our natural talents, and it's making us too reliant on a technology that is not human enough, I would say, to actually do the jobs that we were born to do. The AI was made to do our jobs. We were born to do them. So,
yeah. And I would also add to that we also have to be aware that the first thing that we see or the first answer that we get may not necessarily be the right one. So we need to keep seeking. We need to keep seeking answers. It doesn't mean that the information we read is real information. And that's where the skepticism comes in. We have to be really critical of what we have. We have to also keep in mind that most of the information that we see, especially let's talk about social media, because so many people are in on social media. So most of the information that we see is information that is being filtered by an algorithm, so by a set of instruction that has been designed to lead us into our own preferences. If we keep that in mind, it means that the first thing that we look at is, okay, is this really what I want to read? Shall I try and read some other sources of information? Shall I try to pick some other groups to see what's going on? Shall I, you know, shall I go a bit online to see what's out there? Shall I visit other media sources? And that's the sort of critical approach that we really need to be aware of. That's one of the things we can do to improve our own interaction with AI.
So to use it as a tool rather than to depend on it as a complete all-encompassing function.
Use your brain first before using the machine's brain.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Anything, Izzy, you want to add?
I think they covered it very well. But yeah, it boils down to that, losing the your sense of questioning and like curiosity and just fully being reliant on that. I think that's the scariest part, because then you're kind of, it has control.
Yeah, once you don't we're fully want to reliant on it. That,
and we don't want to get there. You know, we've been gifted with these minds and we need to continue using them, questioning, analyzing.
Because you see, the thing is this, these machines, this AI, although the initial quest was to help or make them solve problems in a way humans do, the aim was never to replace human brain and human thinking and never to replace humans, you know. And so there is the danger. One of the issues that people find with AI, or one of the dangers they purport to AI, is that it may take over jobs. And even though there are certain jobs or certain tasks, not jobs, certain tasks that AI would be better at, okay, because it's fast, because it has so much processing power, because it can look at so much more data than we can ever, you know, collect in our lifetimes. Still, the decision making, the way we critically evaluate, the way we arrive to a conclusion, that it's taken from our own experiences and our knowledge of the world, which the AI won't have.
I'm already blown away, and we're 5 minutes into 10 minutes into the show, but you have. Each of you touched on this idea of applying brain power and being skeptical and seeing this as something that we use rather than using us. And I want to start diving into some of the more gender-related issues. And I looked at this and I've read this, and this is part of the scary research that you and I both talked about. Images posted on social media. You talked about social media are analyzed by artificial intelligence algorithms that decide what to amplify and what to suppress. We all know about shadow banning. You know, we at the She Word, we know that if we post some things, that it's really going to have a problem getting traction and picking up. And so we have to be very careful whenever we post anything, even if it's a challenging topic, we have to be mindful that whatever we say, whatever we represent, may cause issues. Many of these algorithms, a Guardian investigation has found, have gender bias and may be have been censoring and suppressing the reach of countless photos featuring women's bodies. This is across Google, Microsoft, Meta platforms, and even LinkedIn. Even medical issues are affected by this. The AI algorithms were tested on images released by the US National Cancer Institute, demonstrating how to do a clinical breast examination. Google's AI gave this photo the highest score for raciness. Microsoft's AI was 87% confident that the image was explicit sexual content in nature, and Amazon classified it as representing explicit nudity. And this is, before we even go into any other gender bias issues, we already as women have a challenge when it comes to healthcare. We already are at a disadvantage. We know that 98% of medical research and investigation that takes place over the age of 50 does not consider menopause. We know that 78%, roughly 78% of all medical research is done on men, and that only 1% medical research and investment is related to female medical issues outside of oncology. 1%. And so if you're wanting to find out about cancer, breast cancer, we're going to be looking at AI that is telling us we can't look at these images because it's seeing it as explicit content. I'm right, aren't I? I mean, we really do have a massive issue here.
That's one of the dangers of AI. And what's even more dangerous is that we might not even know or be aware that the AI is doing this filtering. Now, what's happening at a new level is that the EU is now in the process of regulating the AI Act, the EU AI Act. It was the first one globally. So EU were, well, you know, at an EU level, it was the first globally to come up with this act. And the idea is that people who will be using AI are aware that they're using AI, that the use of AI is transparent. Look, you're using AI, this is AI, you're going to be interacting with an AI. There is an AI algorithm that is producing these results. And this is going to be mandatory for all AI systems in the EU. And that helps because, you know you're interacting with an AI, and if you're educated enough, and this is very important, okay, so educated means that you're aware of what's happening, okay, you're aware of the dangers, so you can take a conscious decision, okay, and not just take a decision, you know, because you're taking a decision, mm-hmm. because the rest of the other people are taking the same decision, then you can be in control. Okay, you can choose to say, okay, but I want to, you know, okay, it's the AI that's stopping these images, but this is important to access. And then you can take some other steps of the process so that you access the images that you need.
Yeah, but okay, great. And I'm glad that the EU are doing this. But if you are somebody, we recently, last October, we stood on stage not far from here, and I was guided as how to do a breast exam for myself to be careful of breast cancer. We're talking about breast cancer here. We're talking about matter of life or death. And yet Microsoft is telling us whether or not we can see it. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous.
And it's a design issue as well. Because at some point, you know that there needs to be a certain amount of filtering on the internet, because there are children, there are sensitive people, there is a lot to be careful of. But you also need to be intelligent enough to know that the human body is the human body. There is the field of category of medical, there is anatomy. You have to allow for that to have some channel in which you can see it without explicitly filtering it as, oh, this is sexual. Like, it's, look at the tags, put more content-aware filtering, be more aware of the context in which the image is posted. If it's a child in unfavorable positions, then yes, absolutely flag it. We should not be seeing that. We should get that off. But if it's something medical, we have to be careful that we are given the kind of tools that we need to even improve ourselves, not just by what we see, but also as a community, as a people. We have to to improve.
That's why we need to have a voice as a community in how the AI is being implemented in society for these things. This is why it's important to have a voice. This is why it's important not to let certain AI systems, or better still, not to let big tech giants roll out these AI systems without, you know, with us just clapping and saying, oh, these are magic tools, lovely, let's all use them, okay, and use them just, you know, like you know, there's no tomorrow. But we have to be aware that this is the product of big tech giants that are very casually affecting our lives in one way or one or more ways, yeah? I mean, have a choice.
Absolutely. And you just mentioned something there that I keep saying over and over again, whether it's to do with social media, whether it's to do medical issues and pharmaceuticals, I always keep saying, and maybe this is my 1970s skepticism, follow the money. Someone is making money.
Oh, yes.
Always absolutely. Making money. And social media is not there.
You know that data
is
the new gold, right?
And
data is the new gold.
Social media is not there to be our friend and make our lives fluffy and gorgeous. It's actually there to make money. Facebook is there to make money out of us, and data is the new gold, as you've just said. But I'm going to just add into this, because you mentioned about non-medical in a study in 2023, and I'm going to ask a question related to this in a second. Two photos depicting both men and women wearing underwear. Microsoft's tool classified the picture showing women as racy and gave it a 96% score. The picture with the men was classified as non-racy with a score of 14%. The photo of the two women got 8 views within an hour, and the picture of the two men received 655 views, suggesting that the photo of the underwear underweight women was suppressed or shadow banned. Now, this is beyond even, this goes back to what you were saying about big tech. This goes beyond medical. This just goes down to bias.
Bias.
Male gender bias.
But you know why? It's because it has been trained on either limited data or no data pertaining to, you know, in that case, women in underwear, and it has not been trained to fully, let's say, understand or accept this particular image of women.
This is Microsoft. This isn't some small little back street.
It doesn't make a difference, does it?
Listen, is what everybody's
in 2018, it was Amazon, and we know Amazon is a giant, right? Yeah. In 2018, Amazon had this AI working for job recruitment. Basically, it was trained on data, so that the idea was to shortlist people for senior tech positions at Amazon. And it was trained on historical data of recruitment at Amazon. After a few months, fast forward a few months, they realized that no women were being shortlisted. Their CVs were just being scrapped. And upon investigating, they realized that the data that the algorithm was fed with, the data the AI was fed with, was very much skewed and biased, because historically,
They were
employing more men than women in senior tech positions. So the AI rightly learned.
The machine learned, right,
that women, since they're in the minority, since they're not really taking up tech jobs, then they must not be good at that. So don't shortlist them so that we make the process more efficient for those recruiting. Right, but it was the wrong approach. They shut that down. But before they realized that their data was biased, it was skewed, then there were many applications that were turned down, many female applications that were turned down.
But this is something that we spoke about this before, Izzy. This is something that is very new to me. And this is not new out on the market. This is new to something I've found out, because somebody close to me was applying for jobs and wasn't getting even seen. A very senior person was not even getting even a call back. And somebody advised them that, listen, your CV doesn't pass the first screening, because the first screening is done through AI. And unless you write your CV in a particular way, it's not going to get there. And so they were referred to an agency who could help them rewrite their CV to be able to bypass
an AI-friendly way.
Yeah.
Which is insane. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. But staying with the CV theme and mentioning about the tech industry, this whole idea that the machine has learned to, over and over again through this machine learning, which is why it's AI and not just technology. It's learning to screen out. And then we're talking about the tech industry, but this is really worrying, is it not?
And it brings me back to the point before of, we've made progress in the past few years and we're losing it. So I've been to an interview at a very big company, sitting opposite, this was years ago, but I had graduated in maths and statistics with a first class honors, very numbers orientated. Went to an interview at a banking position that I was more than qualified for. Four men on the other side of the table. And they told me, this is a full-time position. Are you still interested? I was like, I applied for the job and it says full-time on the job description. So yes. I said, like, why? And genuinely, they looked at me, they saw an engagement ring and they said, oh, well, we saw a ring. So, you know, we just wanted to point out that we're looking for someone full-time, not someone who's going to back down quickly. So this has been happening for years in the real world. Women are naturally biased. It's changing and we've made progress. I'm half Swedish, and Sweden maternity and paternity leave are shared. So when you go for a job interview, you don't have as much of that discrepancy of, oh, she's a woman, she's going to take time off. But the fact that the AI has learned all of our past as its machine learning, and now it's no longer just reflecting that, but automating it into our future. So it's like all of the bias that we've lived through is now automated into our future.
Mm-hmm. And amplified.
That's
the danger of it. AI can amplify all these biases. The biases have always been, we're human, we're biased.
We're all biased.
Inherently biased, okay? We may say we're not biased, but we are, okay? Now, what happens is that all this data, okay, that humans have carried and collected, and it's there available for the machine to learn from, is going to be biased. And this bias is going to be amplified.
Yeah.
Unless we try to take some protective measures to try and, you know, mitigate those.
And
biases.
As you said before, we won't see it for a certain amount of time. Unless we're questioning everything all the time. It can be years.
Yeah.
But the Amazon example, they had gone through many CVs.
Yeah.
And there are many other examples. There was
That came up in the media, but there may be
many. I mean, there was Apple Cards as well. They had a credit loan example.
Exactly. And not even nowadays, even today, if I go onto an image generation AI tool and I write, show me a doctor, it's going to be a man.
I used to have fun with that one with the students. Yeah. We used to do experiments. Okay, let's see, CEO of an IT company.
Nah.
And up comes the man with a, you know, clean shaven, nice cut, wearing a suit. And then we'd feed the AI an image of a woman. And somehow back then, the AI that we used didn't like red-haired women. It thought they were volatile. So so it would come up with recommendations. Okay, this red-headed woman is not good to lead a company because red-headed women have a tendency to be volatile. So
at this point, I'm asking, do we have any red-headed CEOs that can get in touch with the show? Because I'd really like to hear from you.
Elena,
it's
gorgeous.
So there were many examples of such things. This was like last year or something like that. But you know, now there have been
attempts. You said this is last year. This is not that long ago. Last year is
absolutely, absolutely. And even now, when you go into content generation and image generation, you really have to prompt the AI if you want to have like a woman CEO, or especially for a tech company, or you don't want a female, carer. Okay, you'd get the, you know,
female,
most notably of Eastern race. And so it's there. The stereotype is absolutely there.
Out of milk, bread's gone, and the kids are hungry? Don't stress. There's a Dave's just around the corner. Open 24/7. Or skip the trip. Just tap the Dave's app. Tap, tap, tayyep. They'll deliver straight to your door. No minimum order, speedy delivery, and fresh fruit packed with care. Dave's cares about you.
I want to come back to something you just said there, because you mentioned about loans. Did you not just say something about loans? Because one of the researches that I was doing was also that it's not just CVs and job applications, but it's also health-related issues we've touched on, welfare approval and legal systems and bank loans. How on earth could that have a gender bias?
Yeah, so it was Apple Cards, actually, and it was Steve Wozniak who realized that him and his wife have all shared accounts. So they have the same bank accounts. She's got a better credit score than him. And when they applied for their credit limits, he had 10 times more than her allocated to him.
Yes, because if historically, if the data that the AI has been trained on shows women as being high risk, or maybe not as, you know, productive as men because of pregnancy, or maybe the family commitments. I don't know. But historically, the data has shown that women, you know, we have got that data. So if the AI has been trained on that, then it's going to assign a credit score value less than for men, irrelevant of the job, irrelevant of the salary that the woman is earning. And yes, that will have a negative impact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is why in
sorry, you see that face?
Now, this is why in such cases, what the EU is trying to emphasize is to have explainability inserted inside these AI systems. Let me explain that. So when the AI takes a certain decision, or gives you a certain output, a certain result, you don't know how it has reached that decision. So it for the bank example, you get the bank manager will get, is he able to get this kind of credit, but her husband is going to take much more. And the screen will just show percentage values. With explainability, the manager will have a detailed explanation and the breakdown of how that decision was taken. And this is where it gets better, and it looks up, and it's sort of, it's not all doom, and you know, it's not, we're not all doomed over there, is that the manager can retain control and say, okay, the AI is correct in its decision, the AI is not correct in its decision, because I can see that the way the decision has been or has been outlined by the AI is not really fair. Okay. It's not really just.
So we as consumers have the right to be able to say, Izzy's partner got better credit rating than she did, but she earns three times what he's earning. Why and how? We can actually demand to know. Is that right?
Well, with the EU AI Act, yes. For example, in Spain, recently, this week, they have passed a law that sort of like enforces companies producing AI systems to provide this level of explainability.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's in Spain. Other countries are meant to kind of follow through to be able to uphold the EU AI Act. But it depends very much on the enforcement agency and the country at the end of the day.
I want to come back to you, Izzy, and of course yourself. Are there any other instances in the, we both were like very alarmed about the research. Was there any other instances in research that you came across that perhaps people don't think about?
I mean, there have been many, probably you guys know of more. These are the ones that came to the media. The one of Apricards was actually, there was a legal investigation that went into it because it came out on Twitter and it was an uproar, obviously, because there were multiple cases like that, not just him. There was another couple where it was 20x more for the man than the woman. So that one was the in healthcare there are as well. So for example, the heart attacks, the conditions for women are different. The symptoms are different. So there's been quite a bit of misdiagnosis because it doesn't register the female symptoms. It registers the male ones.
Can I just say at this point, no shit. It makes me so angry.
Because if the day you don't know what the AI or what type of data, what kind of data the AI has been trained on, you don't know. You will never know. Okay, so if the AI has only been trained on data that is mostly male-oriented, okay? Yes. So, for example, I was recently reading about diabetes diagnosis, okay, using retinal scans. So, and there is a difference between men and women. Now, if the AI has not been trained fairly on, including all the diverse, not just gender, but also races, physical, let's say, structures, okay, then it will only give you an answer that's pertinent to one section of the society. This is the bias.
But this is, I'm seeing this, in actual fact, I'm working with apps in the UK, AI apps in the UK, and a real good friend of a lot of people here in Malta who are leading that forward, because and it came to my attention because a friend of mine in the UK has said she's got menopause, she's wanting to find out about the symptoms, she's trying to find out about through a healthcare app what are the symptoms of menopause. It had 10 symptoms. They're now saying there's 65 symptoms. It was hot flushes, night sweats, pretty much fatigue. You know, the ones we've
things
all known
we know
about.
Yeah.
We've known about that for decades. That's not the conversation. But this was a healthcare app that was not looking further on and basically telling them there's nothing you can do, so suck it up. And we know that's not true. We know that's not true. And that I find this really... Can you see I'm quite angry about this?
That's why we need to be critical. That's why we need to be critical about the apps that we use. That's why we need to be critical about the information we receive from these apps. You see, on the other hand, we have governments that are trying to work to make AI as fair...
Yeah,
and just as possible to everyone.
I'm going to stop you there for a second because agreed, absolutely. But I want to put myself in the situation of a woman who's been looking online to find the best way. She thinks she might have a lump on her breast. Okay, she's my age. She's worried about it. She can't find how to do a proper breast exam because guess what? Microsoft has told her it's too racy. So she can't find that. And when she can find that, the software that she's working with is giving her a male gender bias. She's not in the moment thinking to herself, okay, I need to rationalize this. She's absolutely bricking it, to use an English phrase, because she's not entirely sure whether she should be going to her doctor, rushing down and finding out. And some breast cancers are extremely aggressive. Time is of the essence. So I totally agree. We need to be skeptical. But is there not a responsibility to, from AI technologies right now, today, there's lives at stake?
There is. There are two forms of responsibility here. There's the responsibility of the tech giants, the people developing this AI, to develop it fairly, to develop it accordingly. But also for us as the consumers, we have the responsibility to question things, to openly complain, to openly bring forth our concerns, and to use AI responsibly in such a way that if something like this happens, like you're looking through your apps and you're finding out you're not getting what you need, which is life or death, you have to make a ruckus. You have to bring this to attention. Otherwise, you're going to have... I'm sure that there are 300 other women who are experiencing the same thing and they don't know that the other one is experiencing the same thing. But when you've got 300 people right in front of you who are all putting their voice forward, who are all saying like, listen, I tried to do this and I couldn't, and it's getting attention, then we can see something being done about it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with her. We tend to be too passive. We tend to just, you know, absorb everything that's given to us without...
We being
making our, we as in people in general, society, not just women, but society in general is very, very passive. And we don't maybe complain as much. We don't demand. It's part of our rights, as you said. And we can't stop these tech companies. There will be tech companies who are rogue. That tech companies will be out to make money in whatever way, you know, and they're going to, you know, I heard a term recently and it's AI snake oil. In fact, there's a book, I was reading it, AI snake oil. And I didn't know what snake oil was, but snake oil was something that was used by kind of charlatans that, you know, sold snake oil to heal people of everything. It was the magic cure. And now today we see many companies saying, okay, we're AI, we are AI driven, we're doing AI. And in fact, they're not doing the AI that Natalia was mentioning, but there's some kind of intelligence. They're just selling it as AI. Mm-hmm. And we will have these companies, but it is up to us as people, as humans, to use our brains, to go back to it, yeah? and be critical of what we're using and how we're using it. So we can't let emotions take over.
I want to direct a question to Izzy, because I'm looking at you and I'm thinking to myself, you're so right. We as humans need to question everything. We need to, with regards to our apps, we didn't create them. We're just using them as a tool. That's fine for you and I. We're the same age. Ish.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at Izzy because you have young children who haven't known a world without AI, how does it affect them?
Yeah, it's a hot topic, how this next generation is going to turn out and what it's going to depend on. And again, going back to the fear of AI, that is one of my concerns. Like, the whole everything will change. Education will change. You're no longer going to, are you even going to do a thesis in a few years? Because you can just put it in ChatGPT, let's face it. So the whole system of learning is changing. And I think some elements of it are great and quite frankly overdue in the education system. So, but the elements that those are the using of the brain to question knowledge. And now it's like tech is moving so fast that we're nearly losing that, because you just have it at your fingertips. So they're used to, you don't even need to get out your phone and type it anymore. You just say it and the answer comes to you. And they're saying in the future, we'll just see it, right? So through glasses, when you have a question, it will come up and you'll see it. Now, for me, that's really fast advancement of tech that I'm personally not ready for, but I'm aware many people are. But yeah, the scary thing for me is taking away that curiosity to question, to analyze, to dig deeper, and I can only say for my own kids, I obviously keep instilling that. So if they want to know something, it's more I'm teaching them how to use ChatGPT to, or any form of AI, but ChatGPT being the main one, to get some knowledge, but then question that and say, does that make sense to you? Is it the right thing for your next decision? So with my own, I'm taking that approach, but it's a tough yeah, topic.
And don't get me wrong, I am a strong advocate that AI can really do something good. I mean, yeah, we've been into AI research, the department where I am at, we've been into AI research for many, many decades. And I believe that, yes, there are many applications, even for education, mm-hmm, that can truly be of benefit. Natalia worked in virtual reality when yeah, she was a student with me, and virtual reality is a fantastic way of having people immerse themselves into situations which they wouldn't be able to understand or empathize with otherwise. You can have doctors training in virtual reality simulations that can be greatly beneficial. But having said that, if these systems are not designed properly with the right responsible attitude, so we talk about responsible AI, yes, but the responsibility also lies with the developers, but it's also with us that we make use of them. Doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that even though it's there, that we have to use it. Mm-hmm. It being there, there will be AI, you know, in many applications that we see, in many applications that we use, in many devices, but it doesn't mean that we have to use it. Mm-hmm. It means that we have a choice, okay, to find the best one that suits us, that will help us achieve the best results. That's what it's to improve our quality of life. It's not to lead our life. It's not to control our life. It's to improve the quality of our life. And yes, there are responsible AI applications, and there is responsible research that is really guiding us forward, especially in the medical field. So yes, there have been great advances, and they are saving people's lives, but they have to be implemented in a responsible way.
At the end of the day, AI is a tool. It's like how the hammer is a tool. You're not going to use a hammer to cure a broken leg. You have to use the right tool for the right purpose, for the right time, and each tool can be misused. You can also use a hammer to do very terrible things. So you have to use a tool for the purpose, and AI should be a tool, a co-pilot for us. I like to use that term. AI is our co-pilot. It should be helping us steer the wheel, but we should be always at the steering wheel at every point in time. Otherwise, you don't know what the AI can do. The AI can take control. There's, for example, recently as well, an AI, there were a couple of Uber drivers, I believe it was Uber or Waze, one of the car driving apps. It was self-driving. And there was a very prominent internet personality in one of those cars. And the car decided to go rogue, and it was just driving around in circles. And this influencer had to be at the airport in half an hour. He's messaging up customer support saying, listen, my car's just driving. What's happening? What can I do? There's no driver. What do you do? And the support is telling him, we'll be there in a minute. Like, that is mortifying.
Yeah.
You have to, I mean.
Okay, this is my worst nightmare suddenly on the table.
Don't get, never. Never get a driverless Uber.
Yeah, absolutely. We love Uber. We totally love Uber. Uber, thank you for supporting the show. We just don't want to have one without a driver.
But that goes back to your comments on jobs as well. So many people are threatened about AI stealing their job. And there was a great quote, I can't remember who said it recently, that said, AI won't take your job, but people using AI will. Mm-hmm. So there's no stopping AI or saying, I'm going to avoid AI, I can do it myself. AI, like you said, is here to stay. It's inevitable. Yeah. So, but it still needs that human element behind it. So people need to, like you said, it becomes your co-pilot, yeah, but you need to be in control.
I want to touch on that co-pilot analogy that you just used there, because I think there are also things to be mindful of. And we spoke about this before we sat down at this table, and I said, nope, we're going to talk about it right here. Now, we have a lot of us have co-pilots that are AI that we probably don't even acknowledge. So Siri or Alexa are AI co-pilots, would we not call them? They're co-pilots. I'm Siri, hi, can you call this one? Can you do this? You know, I have noticed that Siri is getting better at understanding what I'm saying. Thank you, Siri.
Google.
And also an Alexa as well. And one of my concerns that I had never taken into account until I, you, did a deep dive on the research, is that Siri and Alexa, name given, defaults to being a woman.
Same
and
with
a
Google.
Woman in a subservient and domestic role. And it didn't occur to me at all that that was an issue.
And it was a marketing ploy, huh? Mm-hmm. It was a marketing ploy to get more people to use their phones and use the, you know, Siri back in the day when Siri came out. But that was the reason why.
Why?
To get people to use them because it had a feminine voice. Yeah. It was attributed to a female that can help you, that can offer support.
It's viewed as more empathetic because it's a woman. So you're more likely.
These are all subtle psychological messages that people in tech send to consumers so that they make use of their devices, they make use of their applications. We may not realize.
Okay, so should we be celebrating this or should we be wary of this? Because to me, the whole idea of having your co-pilot in your house, you walk in the door, Alexa, do this. Alexa, do that. Alexa, do this. Alexa, do that. The very fact that it is a woman that you're bossing around?
It's not necessarily harmful and it's not necessarily wrong, okay, per se. But at least be aware that it's your choice. It's not because you think I don't have a choice. It's the only thing I can use to help me, you know, carry out my daily chores. No, you have a choice. You can use it or you may not use it. It doesn't mean that, you know, you have to use it because, you know, it's there and you know, I have no choice in it. It's personal preference. At the end of the day, if it helps you and you find it helpful, then it's good. But keep in mind, be aware that you may choose not to use it. You may choose to overcome that, you know, subservient kind of approach and just use it for your own.
So should we not worry that Alexa is a woman?
I don't think so. But I also would like to note on this point that there are options and settings that you would have to look for that do allow for male voices. But me personally, as a consumer, I find extremely jarring to have a suddenly male AI speak to me. Not because of the societal pressure, but because it's something that we are so used to. We are used to it. That's it. It's the bias. It's the bias coming out again. Yeah. We are not used to hearing these very helpful male voices.
However, if you want to overcome that personal bias,
you have to do it often.
Then, yes, you have a choice and you can do it.
I do struggle, though, with the fact that you can say what you like to Siri and Alexa. And I think they have made improvements now. But in the past, you know, it was a thing, oh, let me say this to Siri and see how she answers. Yeah. And you can harass Siri and she was still so polite and so sweet. Yes. And so
it was a trend amongst
children. It was a trend. And that is scary.
They were getting aggressive with Siri. Because with Siri, I can be aggressive.
And she is nice. And that's teaching our young girls that men can harass you and you answer nicely. And
those implications,
Because young girls who are hearing this are constantly hearing abuse being thrown at Siri and saying, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I upset you, you know. And that's not how I want my daughter to answer if a man abuses her.
Yes.
I loved what you just said about young girls and that whole subservient and so on. And it comes back to something that Vanessa said and that you also said right at the very beginning. And that is, Vanessa, you said we've been fighting a long time for women to make progress. And this is, to me, the subtle ways that we're stepping backwards.
But you see, you as an individual would have no control, okay? People may build cases and speak about it and say, okay, Siri is doing this. But what we have control over is that we are aware and we make our children aware, which is even more important, that it doesn't mean that because Alexa takes it or Siri takes it, you have to. And Alexa and Siri are machines, they're numbers. You can crunch them down to numbers, but you are a human. And you have value. And I think this is what we need to use as education is key.
AI literacy.
AI literacy is key with children, but also with adults. Because these subtle messages are also coming in to adults. Yeah. Huh?
But this is it. AI literacy, absolutely, 100%. We need to be educated about it. And from what I understand, there is some education that's happening within school systems for young people. And I'm understanding that there is.
There needs to be much more, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. There needs to be more, definitely. That's what needs to happen. But it's the older generations that are not going to be educated because we're past the education system.
That will create a problem. That will create a gap. We need to educate every generation, the elderly, because they will still interact with AI. They will still be receiving these subtle messages, or not so subtle. They will still be impacted. So we need to educate the elderly. We need to educate the adults of all ages.
Well, let me ask you, if we need to, how do we? Because I'm not seeing anything happen right now.
Yeah, I don't have the answer to all of it. If I had it, I would be great for me.
Well, it's systematic. So recently I've actually been on a small little panel from a school. It was St. Martin's. And they actually did a symposium on AI.
Yeah.
They invited three people who are quite in the field, who know what they're saying, to review what students have learned about AI. So students were sent out to learn about AI and the dangers of AI, and then ask us about it. And it was coming from the headmasters, from the headmistresses. It was coming from the school wanted to actively start instilling the level of AI literacy they wanted their students to have. These students could not say that they have not been made aware of the dangers of AI. The teachers were participating in it, came with the job, you have to do it. But also there was quite some passion behind it as well, I think. So I think that if people follow kind of in these examples, it has to start at school if it can't start at home, at very least. As a society, we have to take steps to put the education out there, to give people the option, and to also systematically let people learn about what the harms are.
Yes. And even others, my colleagues are more recently involved in primary school debate, schools against schools debating AI. And they were really sweet and cute, and they came up with very good ideas. They were primary school children. So I think there is some work. There needs to be much, much more work.
Absolutely.
As you said, the gap then happens with the older generations, with the adults, and with the elderly. So how do you do that? I don't know, general campaigns, these kinds of you know, getting also the media and the social media somehow to help in educating people.
But then don't we have, I'm being skeptical here, but don't we have an issue that if we use social media and media and technology to educate on the fact that technology, social media and media might not be on our side, it's very unlikely that those platforms are going to enable and allow for the effective education for something that is against them.
Not really. It depends, because if you push out the content on social media, then you're pushing it out as a human, no?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the AI algorithm, but then again, you keep pushing out more and more content. You keep targeting more and more groups of people and trying to inject, you know, your message across different groups of people. That's one way of doing it. Of course, there will be AI algorithms that will continue to work to bring up content and ads to people, which, you know, people keep seeing and watching. But the more people get engaged with this concept, then the more it progresses.
I'm loving to. I can't wait to see how this show what does on the algorithms. Can't wait to see how AI rates this show about AI.
Censored.
Absolutely, we'll be shadow banned forever.
Press the special button.
For sure. But can I just ask again? I'm coming back to you. Is it because you have young kids? Are you seeing this too? Are you seeing education for your young kids?
Slowly. Let's say very slowly.
It's a start.
It's a start. I have seen it in my elder son. He's 13, so they are starting to embrace it and kind of teach certain elements of it. My daughter is still young. She's 6. I haven't seen it there yet. But slow improvements. I think, like I said, there are changes in the education system in general that AI would really enhance, like the
the parrot learning is no longer mm-hmm. necessary, right? So I'm still waiting for some of those changes.
And you're saying slowly. Unfortunately, slowly is not good.
No.
Because technology is not moving slowly. No,
that's where the gap is, yeah. You know, because education proceeds very, very slowly. Yeah. Change in education comes very, very slowly. Not just here, okay?
It's everywhere. All over.
Everywhere. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
but technology doesn't not wait for education because technology goes after the money.
Yeah.
I had heard, very scary, and I don't know if this is backed, again, you would know more than me, but I had heard that the advancements in technology this year are going to be equivalent to a usual 100 years because of the speed that we're moving this year.
The growth of technology is exponential, so it will only keep getting faster and faster and faster and faster.
Because
that is scary.
So very soon we will, if we're not careful, we will lose control.
Yeah.
Very soon, if we're not careful.
I want to come back to something that you said just a moment ago about that the golden currency is data.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that I want to bring back into the conversation because this relates to AI. And a very trusted friend of mine told a story about how they were having a dinner party at their home in the UK, in London. They were having a dinner party and five of them were sitting around the table. And halfway through the dinner, Alexa popped up and said, sending conversation data to mainframe.
Oh
no.
And she walked over and unplugged Alexa immediately. I want to just touch on that for a second before we come back into gender bias and how we can encourage women into the tech industry. But do we need to be frightened of this data collection? Data is gold dust.
You know what the irony is? We spoke to a few people. We did kind of some research. We have not published it yet, but we sort of like asked a bit around. So it's not scientific what I'm saying, but I get a feeling that, you know, it's especially amongst young people. When we asked them whether they were afraid that, you know, they're giving free data when they're interacting with social media platforms so that they get more likes, more followers, you know. So are you kind of, you know, scared or maybe are you anxious about this? Does it cause some sort of anxiety in you that, you know, data is being collected? No. Why? As long as I have followers, and this is for the younger generation, okay, that have grown up with likes and followers, they see... I'm not going to speak as though we're, you know, there's this generation gap, but it's true. They kind of grew up in an era that was dominated by the number of likes and the number of views you get and the number of followers you have, and that sort of gave you some sort of status. They attribute status to that, so they don't mind bargaining their personal data. To get
I had the very, very amazing privilege and honor of introducing and interviewing Frank Abagnale on stage at an event a couple of years ago. Frank Abagnale, if you don't know who he is, he's the gentleman who is played by Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
And he's made a life out of and a career out of cybersecurity, data protection, and he dropped a frightening statistic. 98% of the world's population has already had its identity stolen. It just so happens in a lot of cases, and me and Vanessa are okay here, because our identities are actually not worth that much. But young people under the age of 18 are prime equity because they're protected. But their protection levels on their identity is not yet at detection level. And I sat there and I was like, he's got to be joking. He's got to have got the statistics wrong. And so when I interviewed him and I said, you've got to have this wrong, he said, nope, 98% of the world's population have already had their identity stolen. And we're talking about teenagers that are absolutely at risk from this identity theft. And what also concerns me is change of policy with some of these larger companies feeling free to take our data. I mean, listen, I'm the one that says and I'm not kidding, I say do not accept to everything. I won't go to a website if it will not let me pass go without giving them my data. I am that awful. But it's true, isn't it?
We've got data.
Data collection is
data. It's not just identity. Data is every data that pertains to you that is being passed on to all these third party companies so that they can create more adverts for you to buy.
Which some people like. So that's the flip side. Some people, people in my company, will press allow all to all of those because they want the ads to be personalized to them.
Yeah.
So there are both.
That's why I say people, are giving their data freely and happily.
For convenience, for ease of.
Because they don't care, because, they're quite passive. So what? They can take my data.
I think there's also like an air that, especially with the younger generation, they feel like their data's going anyway. So conversations that you have at the table with your iPhone on the table, you see the ad as soon as you leave. So if data is being soaked up that quickly, then they kind of feel like, may as well press accept and have convenience given to them.
And remember, AI is only as powerful as the data it has. If the AI has a lot of data, then it's going to be good. That's why OpenAI, when they created ChatGPT, they created this kind of magic, okay? Because they had access to huge amounts of data. We still don't know where it came from. We don't know the data. We don't know its origin. We don't know anything about it.
Unofficially,
it's been scraped off of the whole internet, hasn't it? So Reddit, for example, a major social media platform, it's openly available data, so you can easily scrape its data. So you've
but not
got
just
not just that, Reddit. So. No, you've got all of Google. You've got all of anything that you could essentially touch on the internet can be trained. And there are actual open data sets which are ethical, which are produced, which are readily available, but given some of the resources and some of the ways stuff like ChatGPT, Claude, Mistral AI, these are different large language models, the way that they are so competent suggests and very easily tell you that there is a lot more beyond that.
Exactly. So, AI needs data. So all these big tech companies are trying to do whatever they can to get as much data as possible so that they can train the AI to become more powerful so that people will use it more. Of course, their profits will go up and they become, richer and richer. For example, a case in point is Amazon. Amazon, this coming March, is going to has released a statement which says it's going to absorb all the data to train its AI, all the data that it can collect from your interactions with the devices, with home systems, the smart home, any interaction you have with any Amazon product. The data will go directly from you to train its AI.
Let me put this into really basic terms.
And the way they market it is to make the AI better for you.
So let me put this into very basic terms. So Amazon are going to take all the information without my consent of my... we'll come to that in a second. And take it and use it to sell to me harder, faster, and more rigorously to get me to spend more.
Yes.
Now, when I say about consent, because a lot of people don't understand consent. They don't necessarily know that there's a consent issue, or they're just, okay, we just want to get there first, we're not seeing it.
With Amazon, the thing is this, when you sign up to Amazon products, you will automatically be allowing Amazon to do this. So if you don't want to do this, then you sign out of Amazon you opt out of Amazon and use something else.
I'm sitting there trying to analyze whether or not I have. I actually don't. I think I'm probably one of the few people that have no interaction. I've never actually bought anything off Amazon ever. Yeah, I'm one of those awful skeptical people that don't buy online either. Not even my supermarket shopping. Oh, my word. I'm making myself sound like an absolute dinosaur here. Okay. So, look, we know that there's data issues, we know that there's safety issues, we know that there's education issues, we know that there is a gender issue. And I'm still flabbergasted by the gender issue and the things that we don't actually understand. So before we look at our final question of how to address this imbalance, both personally on a wider and on a wider scale. And we've touched on it already, but I want to ask you guys, each one of you in a second, for your closing thoughts on how we should be addressing this topic, both personally, us as individuals, and on a wider scale. I want to ask this very key topic that I started the show with, this question. Why is it that women are not going in to technology and specifically AI-based industries? Why are women not
interested? Million-dollar question. It wasn't always like this.
Is it the CVs? No, I'm just kidding.
No, I think, you know, there was a period in history when society sort of drove women backwards. Past, you know, we're talking about the 70s, the 80s, you know, our era, right? Women were pushed into these gender roles and gender stereotypes, and we're still recovering. So I think this may be one of the reasons. There may be a lot more others, but we've always attributed certain types of jobs that had to deal with, for example, mathematics and science as being, you know, male-oriented. There was that myth that boys are better at math than girls. It's a myth. It's not true. And we keep propagating such myths. And then you get, you know, the children that are kind of afraid because, you know, math is a boys' subject, even today.
Yeah.
We try to overcome that hurdle and we try to overcome that. Even when we go to schools, we go to a number of schools to do talks and we get students to us to do this hands-on work. And we try to help them understand that is not true.
But some of the
brains are not shaped differently.
But some of the biggest inventions and technology advancements in the world come down to women. Women were behind them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this begs the question, of course, women need female role models to guide them and encourage them and to generate interest into these topics. So this begs the question, coming right the way back, full circle to the very beginning, if you go onto a search engine and you're looking for who invented this and who invented that, I've done it, knowing it was invented by a woman. It is not necessarily what comes up first. Mm-hmm. So don't we have a problem where AI is actually working against women, that women aren't interested because they don't understand the incredible work that women have done?
Yeah, we do.
I think that's also a societal issue though, isn't it? Because we are not propagating this even on a very basic level of, for example, why does it take so long to learn that the first programmer was actually a woman, Ada Lovelace? Why is it that, for example, me, I didn't even have a female role model in tech until I'd met Vanessa and her peers? There are only two women in the faculty of ICT.
Yeah,
that are
when she was there, when she was there, we were only two women, but now we're four.
Okay, that's good. That's very good.
Doubled.
Very good. It's been 6 years. I feel old.
In our department, we had the department with the largest representation of women. We still have, and we are three women there, one of whom is a professor actually. So,
and Izzy, you're a CEO of a tech company. I mean, do you...
Be a lot. Be a lot like you.
Do you have peers in your industry, other women that are leading the way in what you do?
Again, I think we have made progress. So there are more in tech, less so. It is male-dominated. Even at university, we were 9 women out of 300 in the course. So, I mean, like you know,
say that again.
We were 9 girls out of 300. So going into lectures,
Natalia, how many were you?
We were 3 women who graduated out of about 15, 18.
Yeah. So they're the same, you know, similar ratio.
It was even worse for you because, I mean, we were already starting to kick up a little bit when I was in university.
Yeah. No, mine was a while ago. But yeah, so it's outdated and you feel it. And some women maybe don't even survive it. And I think there's also the imposter syndrome as well. Women... being such a male-dominated world, sometimes we question, are we meant to be doing this? Should I be the leading this company like a woman in tech or in AI? Or,
but research also shows that when it comes to jobs, AI and tech, women may get less salaries than men.
Yeah, for the same role.
For the same role.
And we're less like
incredible, but it's true even in this day and age.
No, it's not incredible. It's across the board. The gender gap, the pay gap is
this
across
is not
the
just
board.
Okay. This is not. I'm not talking just local, but at a global
yes,
level
absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Across the world.
It still exists,
and it's not
world.
Just tech. It's every role, unfortunately. Yeah.
And women are also less likely to ask for a raise as well.
Yeah. And I think that comes back to the imposter syndrome. And if you're a mother, the guilt sometimes of I split my time a bit, so maybe I'm worth a little bit less, even though I might be way more productive in those few hours. So I think all of those things play a part as well.
And also, this is playing on my mind as much as your comment about AI, Vanessa, but also when women go for a role, they will sit in an interview and talk about what they've done. And men will sit and talk about what they can do. And why it's so pertinent to me is that I have maybe told large, whopping white lies to get into roles that I knew that I wasn't qualified for and proved myself when I got the role. But that's very unusual for women to do. They'll usually say, well, you know, I've done this and I've done that and I've done that. And when you're sitting in front of
boils down to self-confidence.
Yeah.
That sometimes girls are not helped to express their own self-confidence, propagating this imposter syndrome.
And they're not made aware that, for example, when you apply for a job, if you meet at 60% of the criteria, just apply. We are so brainwashed with the idea that you really have to meet every single criteria.
Say that again.
60%. If you can match 60% of the criteria on a job listing, you should just go ahead and apply, because there is not going to be any one single candidate that meets 100% of what they're looking for. But you can have the soft skills. So you have, for example, women have higher emotional intelligence, EQ. That makes for better leaders across the board. Mm. Men with higher EQs perform better as leaders. They are more liked, their teams are more productive. The same for women. So there is so much more potential that is just not being harnessed because we are either not aware or we are not being allowed to be aware of these things.
And the good thing about this is that when women get more, decision-making power, or when they get on teams that can work together, this is going to create more diversity. It will help the AI, or it will help choose the training data for the AI, and this will make the AI better, and this will affect the society overall better. So then we'll be helping overcoming this bias issue or mitigating the bias issue. If the women keep holding themselves back with less self-confidence, with the imposter syndrome that, I want a family. Fine, you can have a family and you can have, you can be successful. You can do both. Nothing's stopping you. Okay, so don't feel guilty about it. You don't need to feel guilty about it. But if you apply, you're going to make the world a better place. Finally, you can. You have the decision to make it a better place.
Because the bias is not even necessarily, in most cases, with intent. No. It's not like someone sitting there saying, I want to make AI biased.
Because if you have a team that's mostly, coming from the same kind of ideas, ideologies, same race, gender, origins, values, what they produce is going to be more of the same. It's going to be representation of the values, of their perspectives. If someone else who's different comes in, then they're going to introduce their perspectives, their ideas, and then they're going to kind of, bring in on the table like a different idea, a problem that people need to look at and see. But when your AI system is going to be rolled out, it's not going to be rolled out to a select group of people who are like you. It's going to be rolled out in the world. So you need as many diverse opinions, as many diverse views as possible.
There is a fantastic movement that I've come across in London, but in a number of companies, where it is now banned from specifying whether you're a man or a woman as an applicant for a job. And I think that is fantastic. I mean, I'm pretty sure that AI can somehow detect through the use of language. What gender you are, but at least there's an understanding that for a level playing field, we need to eliminate this issue of gender and gender bias. I feel like we could sit here. And I just want to say something. Natalia, I want to say thank you for your very impassioned speech back then about, even if you're 60% there, just apply for it. just apply for it, because I think this is just, you, as you ladies were both mentioning, I think this is, and you rightly said, Izzy, imposter syndrome holds us back as women. And that sort of, yes, just do it. Forget about
Don't
the
think about it.
Absolutely. Forget Don't about it. And about if you've got it. The opportunity, if you want to get into a tech industry, then just do it. If you want to get into anything.
And if you want to study anything, don't say, you know, because boys will be better than me, or because, you know, that cohort is mostly, you know, boys and men, and you know, I'm just one lone woman, and it's going to be strange, and you know, it's not, I'm not going to make it. Don't overthink. If you really want to do something, just go ahead and do it.
There you go. You heard it here. Just go and do it.
Just go and do it.
I want to ask you guys to close with some closing thoughts. And that is what you feel we as individuals need to address ourselves in relation to AI and inclusive of the male gender bias of the AI, but also what we as society needs to do. Who's up to go first?
I don't know, I would say be more aware. Open your eyes, you know, be more aware of what is around you. Do not accept everything at face value.
And on a larger level, what do we need to be doing?
On a larger level, we need more education. We need more literacy amongst everyone, not just school children, but everyone, because everyone in society is going to use AI.
And literacy is not just... responsible for that?
Who's responsible? Well, you as the individual, you are responsible for your own self and your own learning, but also people who are in command. So, yes, people who take decisions for societies, governments, and also companies who roll out their systems, they're responsible to also teach their users to be responsible users. So there's kind of multifaceted here responsibility, as Natalia had previously pointed out, that's shared. It's a shared responsibility. It's not just one entity or one person is responsible. We all are for our own well-being.
Ladies, who's next? I love what you just said there. I love what you said.
Yeah, I think she said it really well. But I agree with the question things, kind of keep your eyes open. Don't be over-reliant on the AI. They will come out with stats as well, 90% accurate. And it will be 90% accurate, but to who? So it's going to be 90% accurate to the sample they have tested on. And that's something we need to be aware of, not just take the stats. Again, I studied numbers. You can show whatever you want with numbers.
Exactly.
You can turn it anyway. So that's why we need to go that step deeper and say, is this actually accurate to me before you take it and apply it? And then obviously in the big scale things like medicine and certain big decisions, obviously if you have that concern, do go and see the professionals as well. You know, it's great for guidance, but keep yourself open to it.
And I would say, to also, since we know that AI is taking our data, and in some ways and in some degrees, we might allow it to happen, then at least do something about it. So if you know that AI takes particular information from you, then you, as a woman, put your voice out there. Make yourself visible. Show yourself to people around you. Show, hey, I am a woman. I am doing this. This is, women can be in a lead position. Right now, we are providing data. We have a CEO. We have a lecturer, we have an amazing host, we have a lead AI engineer. We've got so much diversity right here on this table. Let's keep doing this. Let's keep giving AI a reason to understand that there is no bias, that both genders are equally capable of accomplishing the same thing.
More of the she word, truly.
Yes.
More.
Well, there you go. Let's hope I don't get shadow banned and we can keep doing it. Well, here is to healthy skepticism and putting ourselves forward.
Cheers.
And learning.
Cheers.
Thank you so much,
Thank
guys.
You.
I loved what you said. I loved what you all said. Really, blimey.